Identification. This is tape one, side A of the interview with Miss Joan Binns, taking place at her home in Page on the 26th of July 1994 for the ANU Oral History Project. I'm Stephen Foster. Can I ask you, Miss Binns, how you first became associated with the university?
Yes. I saw an advertisement in the Canberra Times for a senior typist. Salary £376,400. And I had been working in the Commonwealth Public Service for nigh on 12 years. The last 8 years I had worked at the Commonwealth Investigation Service, which was the forerunner of ASIO. ASIO had actually been commenced by this stage in November 1949, which is the period I'm talking about now. And I felt I wanted to change completely, so I applied for the job, and Mr. Honan interviewed me, and when he heard where I had come from, he said, I hope you haven't come to be a spy. And I said, no, I assured him I hadn't, but I said, even if I had, I'd hardly tell you, would I? And he agreed. But the long and short of it was that I then was appointed and received a letter of the 13th of October 49 saying that I had been appointed. And the and again on the 17th, and there was just a little bit of correspondence between us because of I was a permanent public servant and I wanted to retain all my rights, long service leave and rec leave and everything else. And I was informed I must not put my resignation in from the public service until the university had gazetted my name as a permanent appointee. And that appeared on the 3rd of November, on the 2nd of November, and I was therefore started and appointed on the 3rd of November 1949.
Can I just interrupt? You were a typist at ASIO or the predecessor of ASIO?
Commonwealth Investigation Service. I was a typist there. And it was a branch of the Attorney General's Department, yes. And ASIO had already been formed, and it was taking over a lot of the more interesting side of the Commonwealth Investigation Branch. And it was really, in many ways, superseding the work of that had been done by Commonwealth Investigation Service. So I felt that I would like a change.
Apart from the question about whether you were a spy, yeah, can you remember anything else that Ross Honan asked you?
No, I think I did ask him, and I was certainly trying to make very certain, as I had then, that I obtained all my rights. And this did crop up, actually, again, and it was a good thing I had it in writing, when I had put in my resignation, or retirement, actually I should say, retirement from the ANU, and they went and were sort of questioning some of my period of recognition in the public service, and I was able to inform them. But no, it was more a question of... I wasn't tested at all for my qualifications. I think it was taken for granted. I was a permanent member of the public service and was a reasonable typist.
But they didn't ask questions about, or he didn't ask questions about, words per minute or anything like that?
No, he did. No, it was a permanent position he was offering, and that was it. And there was only one other person who... had been appointed in and appointed in that fashion, and that was Helen Lindsay, who was the senior typist, and she'd been there for some couple of years before me. But she and myself were the only ones who were appointed in that particular fashion. And it was the very early days. Actually, it was before the university moved onto the site, and the office of the administration, which of course is all there was of the the ANU, as distinct from the Canberra University College, but the there was only the academic staff, administration staff, I should say, no academic staff and no students as such. And our office at that particular period, for a short time, until early in 1950, was at Barton. I think it was at the mountable buildings that were used by the public service board and other departments. And I think it was known as the Wool Shed.
Was post-war reconstruction in there too?
It could have been, yeah. They certainly, I think it was one of the other departments were in the old hospital buildings, yes. Regional Development was another one of the departments. But I really don't remember much because we weren't there, or I wasn't there very long before we moved into the Nissen huts on the site. And there were several of these Nissen huts. And we moved in there somewhere, I think, early 50. And you already know this photograph from which I think you have
yes.
That dreadful one. Anyway.
But that's a better copy, actually, than the one I have. So I might at one stage get a copy.
Oh, yes, I have actually two of those. Yes, that's right. And a few of the smaller photos I can take. The buildings on the Nissen Hut buildings, they were spartan, but reasonably efficient and comfortable. But they could be very cold and drafty in winter and definitely hot in summer. Now, I've got here a few little photos to show you. Have you seen those at all? Professor Copeland, the Vice Chancellor, and his secretary. Miss Joan Morris, yes. Mm. And I was second in charge in the typing pool, and one of my jobs was to assist her with note taking. So whenever she had a notebook full of notes, I'd be called in and he would dictate to me. And Helen worked more for Mr. Honan and did the council meetings and those sort of things, and I did the more general.
Did you take shorthand?
Yes. Yes, we had to, yes. It was all part of it. You didn't pass the public service exam without shorthand. You had to do shorthand, 100 words a minute. That is Mr. Maurice Brown, Assistant Registrar, and Mr. K.J. Long, Deputy Assistant Registrar, somewhere about 1950. You can see how spartan looking it is. And that, he seems to have a better room. That is Mr. Honan with his secretary, Mrs. Labour. The L-O-B-E-R, Mrs. Labour, 1950.
Dorothy Labour.
Do you know her at all?
No.
I don't know. any rate, those are the... Oh, these were some of these. That's the typing pool.
Where are you?
There.
Oh, yes.
And I had I don't know why, but I was landed because some of the work I did with a... they were all mainly Remington typewriters, and I was landed with a very long carriage one. It's more sitting off there. Yes, that's right. Yeah. These are reserved to a little bit later when these are the geography department ones. And those reserved those. That deals with that particular period. Now, I was going to tell you that on the the Nissen huts were on the present site, I think roughly where the law faculty buildings are now, somewhere in that area, around there, where that was. Any rate, on the paddock, I didn't have any transport in those days and didn't own a car, and I went by bus, got out at the old, at the Institute of Anatomy there, across the paddocks. And one stage, early in the piece, they had a bull tied up, grazing in there on the property. And I think those of us who bust and had to go across asked if the bull could be removed. We didn't like going across there. The other thing to mention about the very rural settlement was that after rain, sometimes it was very good hunting ground for mushrooms. Now, there is a story, and I don't know if it's hearsay only, but at the time of the interim university council meeting, one meeting was slightly delayed while Professor Mills, who was the chairman, was supposedly out collecting mushrooms. It might only be hearsay, I'm not sure.
No story.
No story, yes. And another little story is that later on, some of our more European staff members would collect mushrooms, and they felt safe eating certain mushrooms that we didn't feel safe. They wouldn't have been toadstools, but certainly that. But that was the work that we did, and as I say, I worked with Professor Copeland, and if I was to asked what I thought of him, I would say that he was a fine man, very good for the job for that particular period. He was easy, genial man. Certainly, I think he was the right type of person for that particular period of the university administration. He had a way of getting to know. He was well known. He had been Professor of Economics at Melbourne University. He'd been my brother's, actually, professor at Melbourne University. He was able to attract the right people at the right time for the university. And I have, many times I've been in there taking notes, and the phone had rung and he answered, and he talked for quite a while, and I could tell, you know, I thought, you're buttering somebody up, you're trying to get something in. But he did, and he was able to attract the right people, I think, because at that particular period the university needed the right people, and he was able to do that. And I found him a very pleasant person, too, to work with.
Some of Copeland's critics, and of course every Vice-Chancellor has
critics.
There might
be lots.
Well, they say that he was something of a publicist.
Yes,
more
well, I
publicist.
Think that was true. And that's when I say he buzzed people up. He was. But, you see, he had to be, because the university needed publicising. That was his job, and I think that was where one of his great contributions probably for the period. He wouldn't have been probably the best Vice-Chancellor for a later period, but for the formation, and I think you see people like Bill Hamilton and Professor Matthews later on, they had worked with him in China and so on, and yes, he was the right person, yes.
He also got on very well with Ross Honan, didn't he?
Yes, I think he did, yes, and Mr. Honan too. I didn't have a great deal to do with him, but I liked him very much. And in fact, all the staff members, the ones that we had when Bill Hamilton came, it was later, and then Lois Bellingham, I remember her very much,
She was the assistant accountant.
She was the assistant accountant. She was the first of the accountants, actually, yes. Mm. And actually, she was a very fine shorthand writer, with not that she needed to use it. But if you were ever stuck, she was the first one you could always go to, and she was always willing to help.
How did you refer to the Vice-Chancellor? Did you say Vice-Chancellor, Prof, or Professor Copeland?
I think Professor Copeland, if I remember rightly, yes. Of course, this is going back, a number of years, 79, isn't it? Well, 49, rather, when people didn't use Christian names the way it's done so generally today, and people would be more formal. Mm. But I think Professor Copeland was what we usually, Professor, you'd call him Professor, yes. And that was, there were other people who came. I can remember when, Morris Brown was the assistant one. He later left. But it was... The typing was typing in shorthand. The old council meetings and everything was done with stencils. It was long before photocopying machines. Just ordinary photocopies, stencils and ordinary carbon copies of things. Awful lot of typing done that way. Mm.
You probably typed quite a few of the letters that went to the Academic Advisory Committee in London.
A few, but I think most of those probably would have gone through with Mr. Honan. Yes, those sort of things were. No, it was more general admin work there. But is there anything else for that particular period? Somewhere along the line, the academic staff were being appointed from overseas, practically all of them were. Now, I think when I say there was no staff or students, I could be correct myself, because I think there were several. I think Professor Borry, and I'm not sure about Dr. Price, but Professor Borry was on a travelling fellowship along with somebody else, I think. But they never were on the site at the time, but they weren't associated. Well, when the academic staff started to arrive, Professor Crocker was one of the first to arrive. And then later on, Professor Saw and Professor Swan and Mr. Borry turned up, and Professor Nardell and Dr. Charles Price. They all started to move over into the old hospital buildings on the site. So it was then felt that they'd have to start a typing pool. And that was a joint schools typing pool to give assistance, typing in shorthand and take notes and take messages and just do that sort of thing for the academic staff.
Joint schools meaning?
Meaning social research school of social sciences and research school of Pacific studies. So Helen Lindsay wished to stay with Mr. Hannon and the administration and the other, and so I was asked if I would start the typing pool, which I did. I actually got a letter dealing with that, and all this rustling of paper. I started the typing, and there were several. I had several assistants. Well, it soon became very obvious, and I was working for that time. I was appointed together with a junior typist, Miss Bell, who was appointed on the 26th of September 1950. I wrote a letter, a memo, to Mr. Honan on the 30th of October 1950, about 3 months after the school, the typing pool had been commenced, and pointed out some of the problems already discovered in trying to cope with just the typing pool and the arrival of the academics, setting them up, trying to keep track of them. And already I was being more or less seconded or being induced by Professor Crocker to work more for him. And I found it a bit difficult at times because I used to say to him, well, you know, I've got to be back there, and he'd, you know, sort of try to take over. Well, in this instance, he immediately recognised the problem I had. So he helped me draft this, and I'll read it. Would you like to hear it?
Yes.
Registrar from Joan Bin, subject, report on the work of the typing pool for the research schools of social sciences and Pacific studies. With the rapid increase in the personnel and work of the research schools of social sciences and Pacific studies, I think it may be of interest to the administrative office if I set down a short statement of the work of the typist section based on my 3 months' experience as officer in charge. 2, scope of work. Together with a junior typist, Miss Bell, who was appointed on 26th of the 9th, 50, the section is handling the shorthand typing and copying requirements of the following: Professor Crocker, Professor Sawyer, Professor Swan, Dr. Stanner, Mr. Borry, and Mr. Packer. In addition, we are handling all outgoing mail, keeping postage stamps account, entering and sending telegrams and cables. I also hold a requisition book and furnish orders for stationery, writing material, office requisites, etc., for the staff of both schools. As the two schools do not yet have their own telephone exchange, I am frequently applied to by the telephonist to take messages or to locate members of the staff when she's unable to contact them. This is a serious interruption of my work, all the more so as I frequently do not know the movements of the staff. Very underlined that part, I should say. At the present time, professors, readers and research fellows maintain their own filing systems, but it appears that their filing will soon assume such a scale that they will be calling upon us for help. I doubt if this work could be efficiently performed by a general typing pool. Another point is that when professors and readers are absent, extra work falls on us, such as dealing with mail, telephone calls, etc. 3, increased typing assistance. From my experience during the past months, one major typing requirement which we have to perform is the transcribing of lengthy articles, addresses, etc., which are often required at short notice and necessitate continuous attention until completed. Because of this, further typing assistance is urgently required, not only in order that the routine work may be maintained, but also if we are to meet the needs merely of the present staff of the two schools, not to mention possible future appointments. 4, suggestions and recommendations. A, departmental typists. To meet the heavy typing requirements of the departments, it appears that it might seem necessary to provide each department with its own typing staff. I realise that the securing of additional typists is extremely difficult, as also is the obtaining of accommodation for them. B, central office. In any case, it will be necessary to have one central authority for the dispatch of all outgoing mail, coordination of postage accounts, requisitions, etc., say that a small general office is desirable and would facilitate audit requirements. 5. Conclusions. In making these suggestions, I have had in mind arrangements which would not merely meet the present needs of the two schools while they are in their present temporary quarters, but also a clerical system which could be carried over into the permanent buildings when erected. If the administration should decide to vary the existing staff positions in regard to the typing pool, I respectfully request that my status as senior supervising officer should be taken into consideration. That was dated 30th October. And I have a reply here. Actually, this reply I got a copy of a reply that Professor Crocker, because he was pushing this very much, and Hannon wrote to Crocker on the 19th of January, 1951. Dear Professor Crocker, this was later on, yes. Dear Professor Crocker, thank you for your note of 16th of January about secretarial assistance. I had the further advantage of a conversation with Professor Swan on the matter yesterday. I now propose, A, to transfer Miss Binns to the Department of International Relations as from the end of her leave on the 16th of February, for a probationary period of 3 months. She'll not suffer in status or salary by the move. To replace Miss Binns in her present position by Miss Jeffrey and Miss Rheinstein, who will also be on probation for 3 months. To ask you to consult your colleagues at the end of the probationary period and advise us as to whether the 3 appointments should be confirmed. I've asked Mrs. Rheinstein and Jeffrey to give Miss Binns their help full-time if required from now until Miss Binns goes on leave. I propose that they should move into the old hospital buildings next Wednesday afternoon. If you concur in these arrangements as they affect your department, I shall send copies of this letter to Professor Saw and Swan and to the 3 girls concerned. Yours sincerely, R.A. Hayman. So that was it. And I then took over with Professor Crocker and in the Department of International Relations as his secretary. Professor Crocker had a room in the front, the front portion of the old hospital buildings. I had an adjoining room looking out there, and I think at that particular period there was the Department of Regional Development, I think, was also in that area, so wasn't entirely university at that particular stage. There were some funny little insights. I don't know whether I ought to say. Maybe you could erase them if you feel that it should be later on.
I'm sure you should. You must give them to us, but just let me turn over the tape first so I
yes,
don't break
right.
you off in the middle of an
no,
insight.
No, that's all right. Yeah, that's all right.